Joining us now, I'm always excited to bring on this guest. He adds a lot to this program. I'm very pleased when I could get him. He has time to come on from the Alabama Policy Institute. Phil Williams joins us. Senator, how are you this morning?
Hey, Jeff. Well, I'm like many, I am down with the China flu. And so I tell you right now, my sentiments are that I better never get a job in the State Department or China's foreign policy is going to hurt. Let me tell you right now.
We're all hoping the best for you to get past it. Well, tell us a little bit about dealing with that. I like to ask this of all the city lawmakers. We have kind of a COVID caucus in the Alabama legislature these days. This seemed to be really coming down with it. But when you actually experience it and live it, does it change anything that you think about the way this ought to be handled?
You know, I'm not sure. No, I don't think it does. I never doubted that it was real. I mean, never once. And wore my mask whenever I went out. And we got it through family members at Christmas time. And, it happens. My wife and I are gutting it out right now. But I would still say that we have got to maintain an open economy. And we cannot get back to the position of declaring businesses non-essential. That truthfully, you've got to give people the ability to be self-governing and self-responsible. We dodged the bullet for my wife, and I dodged the bullet for 9 months, and finally got it. Now we're just riding this sucker out. But I wouldn't change a thing about the way I've felt about the way government's handled it.
Because I guess the people that you really hear it from that weren't really taking it as seriously, or they were questioning the mask. Then they come down with it and something happens and they change. But those that took it seriously, and let's say you have that ideological core, which, seems to be the case with you, not really budging that much on what a policy approach should be taken to COVID-19.
No, I don't think so either. And it's just an unfortunate circumstance that we have to deal with. But if you look at the various states right now, Florida is running parallel or even a little bit better than New York, and New York's in complete shutdown / meltdown, and yet Florida is for the most part open for business. Alabama's had a moderate view, but if you look at what's happened just this morning, it was pointed out they're going to have to put more money into the unemployment compensation fund because a whole lot of businesses are about to see their unemployment taxes go up because the government shut them down, put their people on unemployment, and that in turn now is going to let the government raise their taxes. And it's just That's what I call a self-licking ice cream cone in government structure. But I still don't think, though, that we should have gone the route of California or New York by any stretch. And I believe that we've got to maintain an open economy and be able to thrive going forward.
Well, and here's the danger, and I think this is a very reasonable thing to point out, that the pandemic is being used by government to expand the scope of government, that it is, while it is a bad thing, it's a thing to be taken seriously. There are some within government that are looking at ways to expand their authority, to expand their power. And they're, we're all human beings. That seems like that could be a threat or something that we'll have to deal with long after this comes and goes.
No, I think you're right. And that's both at state and federal levels. And, we're going to be releasing, API is going to be releasing a report tomorrow. Our fiscal analyst, Justin Bogey, has just completed a complete, top to bottom review of the Ivy administration's use of the $1.8 billion in CARES Act funds the state received. And the vast majority of that, like over 80%, was used to fund government and was not used to, assist private citizens and private businesses. Were there some grant programs? Sure. Were there some vouchers for internet, connectivity? Sure. But the reality is the vast majority of it was used to prop up or expand or enable government structure. And that's a shame. I think you're going to have to keep an eye on this and, they used to always say, never let a good crisis go to waste, and liberals are using this one right now.
Let's talk about your op-ed here out yesterday. Where have all the heroes gone? And just my read of it, you really address this void kind of in the public square of, I guess, kind of questioning some of the things going on right now.
Yeah, thank you for that. Just released it yesterday, and it's written from the perspective of, I think I said in there that as a conservative, over the last 5, 6, 7 days, I feel like I've just stepped through the looking glass. It's like I'm in Alice in Wonderland now. So I'm watching the Mad Hatter's Tea Party all around me, where you just never would have imagined some of what we're seeing with big tech and with government structure and with government spending. And yet here we are. The group that I feel like, everyday citizens, first of all, have to be willing to speak out. I do not mean march into the Capitol and break things and kill people. But I am saying that at the very least, citizens need to find their voice and be willing to speak. But there is a group right now that I believe is best poised to put up a firewall against liberal encroachment, and that's our state legislature. And for the most part right now, I don't think the majority of our state legislature fully appreciates the value that they bring to the fight. I don't know that most of them are even walking in the authority of their positions right now. They've been almost neutered this past year by being put out with the COVID pandemic and then literally having the executive branch for the state of Alabama do everything, even spend the money. And that's just, to me, got to be rectified, and they have got to have the ability as a legislature to speak into these, year-long emergency proclamations and to be able to call themselves into session and get some things done when we need them. And, it's crazy to me that we have 140 members of our state legislature, and yet the reality is you're hearing virtually nothing from them. We have a session coming up, but even then it's going to be limited access. Here we are needing to recover from COVID and fight off liberal interest from D.C. and put up a firewall in that regard, and yet we're hearing right now about medical marijuana bills and other things that the public is just going to stare at them and say, what are you doing?
Well, and it does seem like, as our discussion, big picture wise with COVID, that here in Alabama, there has been this kind of consolidation of power, that the executive branch, and let's look at the way the CARES Act money was handled there at the very end, given the governor or this group of legislators, I think members of leadership, and the governor, this authority to dole that out, but you don't have, it's not, things aren't functioning like they're supposed to, and these are obviously extraordinary times, but they're being used to consolidate power, and we see what happens where you just have a select group of people making choices. That's not a good conservative principle or governing philosophy.
No, not at all. The governor came out recently and issued a couple of proclamations, one of which was to direct that the State Department of Revenue not tax federal relief dollars. Well, that's great, but that's actually legislative work that needs to be done. The governor also extended certain legislative acts that were due to expire on December 31st through March. Well, that's great. We need that, but at the same time, that's not her job. The governor has no unilateral authority to extend a legislative act. The legislature has to do that. So, it's one of those things where, the ends that she achieved by doing so were things that even API had been asking for, but we had been asking for them the way it's supposed to be done through the legislature. And so it's amazing to me to watch the way things have gone now for literally 9-10 months. And the general public is probably not fully aware to some degree that the legislature has almost been neutered by the executive branch and the pandemic.
Well, and that's the problem you find with particularly, I think if they were just looking at this at face value, the public is, they would be upset by it. But everything is so national or federal focused right now. There is a lot going on in the political sector. And meanwhile, there's just not the oxygen in the room for the way the state of Alabama at the top seems to be running everything right now.
No, and you're right. All the focus is on what's happening in D.C., and that's, you know, that's not to be unexpected. I mean, you're transferring from one presidential administration to another. You had some significant news events out of D.C. with the riots last week and, you know, with people questioning the validity of the election processes in certain states. It's been an incredibly difficult, probably year, but the reality is the last 60 to 90 days have been tumultuous. And then you got, you know, this unbelievable call for impeachment in the last 7 days of the Trump administration, unbelievably tone deaf on the part of the leadership in the House and Senate. But that being said, there is still something to be done back here. And the legislative session that is coming up is going to be probably the more critical gathering of our legislative bodies that we've seen in Alabama in quite a long time.
But even then, what I'm hearing is they're going to try a couple of 3-day weeks initially and then reevaluate that third week. And then maybe by then the hope is that there will be the vaccine will be more available or something like that. But, you know, that discussion aside, it does sound to me like it's still going to be a very limited, hamstrung Alabama legislature, and that's still going to be somewhat, maybe it's a little different after those first 2 weeks, but there's still going to be somewhat of a power vacuum there to be filled by the executive.
And that may be true. We'll wait and see. I mean, right now, the legislative leadership is just starting to speak out about how they intend to conduct the session. They are going in on February 2nd. They are not going to allow true public access the way they usually would. The galleries will be closed. You have to make an appointment. You have to go through scanners, all that kind of stuff. So you can imagine on the one hand, that means lobbyists aren't, you know, roaming the hallways and so they're going to be frustrated and having less influence. But then at the same time, the general public, who should have a right of access to its legislative body, doesn't even have that right now. So there's a lot left to be determined how they're going to do this. But I think what's most important is what they actually achieve. If they go in there and they start doing, you know, fluffy bills and, you know, padding the budgets and not dealing with tax issues and incentivizing businesses to reopen, if they pass marijuana bills and gambling legislation, at a time when the public can't be there to provide public comment in their committee hearings, that's going to go down badly. And so I hope they will recognize how much we need them on some key issues, and we need to save some of the fluff for another day.
I mean, and that is a valid point. These big things, even if they are, they don't seem to be, they shouldn't be a high priority, but they are still big nonetheless, like gambling or marijuana. They could be done without really the public around. Maybe they have to watch it on a live stream or something like that. But typically, when you're going to do something that's a big landmark, cornerstone legislative act, you want more involvement. You want more buy-in from the public.
You do. And you know, for those who've never had an opportunity, I encourage them in the future to do so. If there's an issue that you're concerned about that's before the body, you're allowed to call up and ask for a public hearing and then show up at, you know, Judiciary Committee or the, you know, small business or whichever committee is carrying the bill and speak to the issue, because that's your right as a citizen. And it's not clear at this point that that will even be an opportunity. And yet they are looking at some major landmark bills, but those same bills are not the ones that people need to help them get past the pandemic and to put up firewalls against a regulatory burden that could be coming quickly from the Biden administration. So I'm hoping that very soon we're going to see an agenda, because right now I don't see an agenda coming out of leadership. And if we see an agenda that is helpful, API is certainly willing to call it and clap for it and applaud it and push for it. But in the meantime, we're going to continue as API to ask for about 6 bills that we believe are crucial, and call that our agenda, and hope that the conservative caucus, which is still in the process of forming, will actually be pushing forward as well.
Yeah, and we'll have to talk about that conservative caucus later on down the road sometime. Certainly raised a lot of eyebrows in Montgomery circles. But, Senator, we're out of time. Folks want to check out your op-ed, find anything the Alabama Policy Institute is doing, or find you on social media. Can you point them in the right direction?
Yeah, I appreciate that. We're at alabamapolicy.org. That's alabamapolicy.org. And then I am still on Twitter for the moment, at Ben Phil Williams. And when Parler comes back up, I'm there too. Thank you.
We appreciate it. Senator Phil Williams, ladies and gentlemen.